This is Phoenix FM.
This is the show that goes like this with Ben Simmons.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Let her go. Y'all ready for this?
I just wanna be part of your symphony.
Hello, one and all. A huge welcome to the show that goes like this with me, Ben Simmons. It's Tuesday. It's the 20th of September. I hope you've had a wonderful evening so far. It's a big night tonight. We will be very shortly revealing the greatest movie ever made. The greatest film of all time, according to listeners of the show that goes like this. You have voted in your hundreds. Thank you so much for doing that. I think I can safely say the World Cup of Films has had the most votes of any World Cup I've done. We've done soft drinks, we've done chocolate bars, we've done biscuits. We did misheard song lyrics many years ago. But the World Cup of Films has literally gripped this part of the nation. So what's going to be the winner? Is it going to be this? Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. One of our finalists up against, of course, this. Of course, the classic Back to the Future. Now, both films part of trilogies, but we are going with those individual films. Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back, Episode 5, versus Back to the Future, the original film. So The Empire Strikes Back versus Back to the Future. I'm going to play a track that links to each of those songs. Then I will happily share with you the results of the polls that have taken this station by storm over the last 2 or 3 months or so. Before any of that then, linking to Empire Strikes Back, it's Alicia Keys. She's got an Empire State of Mind.
Jungle with dreams. such a melting pot. On the corner selling rock, preachers pray to God. And a gypsy cab takes me down from Harlem to the Brooklyn Bridge. Someone sleeps tonight with a hunger for. Put your lighters in the air, everybody say
Phoenix FM.
Alicia Keys representing the Empire Strikes Back with Empire State of Mind.
We would be honoured if you would join us.
Absolutely, but first we've got to hear a track that links to Back to the Future, our other finalist in the World Cup of Films. Therefore, a bit of Dua Lipa, who loves future nostalgia. She knew it would be a great film.
Future.
You want a timeless song, I wanna change the game. Like modern architecture, John Lautner coming your way. I know you like this beat, cause Jeff been doing the damn thing. You wanna turn it up loud, future nostalgia is the name.
I know you're done trying to figure me out. My name's on the tip of your tongue, keep running your mouth.
In a glass house, you keep on talking that talk. One day you gonna blast out. You can't be bitter if I'm out here showing my face. You want what now looks like? Let me give you a taste.
I know you're done trying to figure me out. My name's on the tip of your tongue, keep running your mouth. You want the recipe, but can't handle myself, myself, myself.
You can't get with this if you ain't built for this. You can't get with this if you ain't built for this. I can't build you up if you ain't tough enough. I can't teach a man how to wear his pants.
I know you're done trying to figure me out. My name's on the tip of your tongue, keep running your mouth. You want the recipe, but can't handle myself, myself, myself.
We'll be right back.
Phoenix FM.
Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia played in honour of Back to the Future.
Great Scott!
Yes, so we would be honoured if you would join us, and Great Scott. Two great quotes, two amazing films, two fantastic theme tunes. Which one has won the World Cup of Films? Before I reveal that, I will tell you that all the tracks throughout the rest of the show link to most of the films that made it to the final 32. Obviously, we're not going to play 32 tracks tonight, so a lot of them we have tracks that link to some of the final films in the countdown, but we have got to our final two. Who on earth has come out victorious? Well, along the way, along all the knockout rounds, we did have some trouncings. We didn't have too many rounds that were extremely close. For the final, though, we absolutely did. It was almost Brexit all over again, thanks to the hundreds of people that voted on this one. I can now reveal one of the films received 47% of the vote. One of the films, the winner, received 53% of the vote. And I can now tell you, according to the show that goes like this and our fabulous listeners, the greatest movie of all time is The Empire Strikes Back! Huge congratulations then to The Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars Episode 5. Yes, I'm sure. Lucasfilm, Disney, anybody that's ever had an interest in Star Wars will now be celebrating extremely vociferously because that has been crowned the best film ever made. Quite incredible, really. Made in 1980, The Empire Strikes Back. And also Back to the Future from 1984. So, bearing in mind all the technology you get in modern films, all the incredible number of digital artists that work on films when you watch the credits scroll these days, two films that were made almost 40 years ago, each of them. One of them more than 40 years ago, one of them just under. And those made it through to the final two. And these were against, in the entire World Cup of Films, you know, some incredible films like 2001 Space Odyssey, Psycho was in there, When Harry Met Sally, Inception, The Green Mile, Pulp Fiction, Casablanca, The Godfather, Schindler's List, Rocky, you know, Seven, Terminator 2, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, The Shawshank Redemption, Citizen Kane, The Matrix, Fight Club, The Wizard of Oz, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Forrest Gump, Batman the Dark Knight. Incredible, incredible films made it to the final 32, and the greatest one of all time, The Empire Strikes Back. So, for the rest of the show, you're going to hear tracks that link to some of those great films that made it to our final list that we had to whittle down to find out that The Empire Strikes Back is the nation's favourite. So, you won't hear all tracks related to The Empire Strikes Back. What I would like to do is share with you some trivia about Back to the Future and The Empire Strikes Back. So that is quite exciting, isn't it? And if you are here live listening, I'm very grateful that you are. If you know people who may be interested in listening to this show, then just play them this.
We would be honoured if you would join us.
Absolutely, and the more the merrier. If you miss any of this show, it's available from tomorrow morning on my blog page on the Phoenix website, phoenixfm.com. Go to the schedule, click on the show that goes like this on a Tuesday evening. You'll be taken to my blog page with all previous recordings available. Quite incredible then. 53% of the vote for The Empire Strikes Back, 47% for Back to the Future. Incredibly close. They are two phenomenal films. I do massively enjoy both of them and the trilogies. And I know Star Wars now has an incredible number of spin-offs and things that have come as a result of it. Andor starting very soon. I think with a triple episode release on Disney Plus, almost like a movie length introduction to it, but it is a series. So that's something to look forward to that leads up to Rogue One, featuring some of the characters who were in Rogue One. That should be quite exciting. But Back to the Future, brilliant. And I kind of love the fact that they haven't sold the rights or allowed anyone to do any remakes or anything like that. It is what it is. It's remembered fondly in that state, and it is a fantastic franchise. So yes, Star Wars, Back to the Future, both phenomenal. Empire Strikes Back just shaded it. So, what are we going to play now then? Well, one of the films that made it through to our final 32 was The Green Mile. Therefore, here's CeeLo Green. He won't forget.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
And this is the show that goes like this, which has just declared the greatest movie ever made is Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. I still firmly believe, whatever you've read, seen, researched anywhere, that nobody knew how successful the original Star Wars would be, hence it was called Star Wars. I know on the opening crawl it said A New Hope. Once The Empire Strikes Back was made, then you realised it could be a franchise, it could be extremely, you know, popular amongst millions of people, and then demanded a third part of the trilogy. You know, if the first film hadn't done too well, I don't think they'd have made the second one. I don't think George Lucas would have been able to afford it, particularly when I share with you some interesting trivia. But in the rest of the first hour of the show, we will have the runner-up, only just narrow runner-up, 47% to 53% of the vote. So we're going to start then with facts about Back to the Future. Firstly, Bob Gale, the screenwriter, based the idea on a high school yearbook. He was at his parents' house rummaging around in the basement, came across his dad's old school yearbook and wondered if he would have been friends with his dad if they'd known each other when they were both 17. He mentioned this to his friend Robert Zemeckis and they turned it into a high-level story with three basic ideas. One, a high school kid gets sent back in time. Two, he meets his parents. Three, his mother falls in love with him. Those were the three things they knew had to happen, and then they attempted to flesh it out into a full screenplay, and the rest, as they say, is history, or future history, whatever. Quite a few things in the initial script ended up being very different in the final draft. It's crazy to think of how it would have been if this had come to pass now. Marty McFly was originally going to be called Marty McDermott. Don't like that. And the famous clock tower climax of the movie wasn't part of the script. Instead, originally Marty and Doc were going to visit a nuclear test site in Nevada, and a nuclear explosion would send the DeLorean back to the future. And that was changed because the whole sequence would have proven too expensive to film. And the final sequence of the film, with Doc turning back up at Marty's house and taking him and Jennifer on another adventure, which became the sequel, was originally not planned. And the original draft of the script ended with Marty's dad looking at a 1955 newspaper with a picture of Marty playing Johnny B. Goode on stage, saying, "It can't be, but it is." And in the first drafts, the Doc's pet was a chimp called Shemp, which was changed to a pet dog called Einstein at the request of the head of Universal, Sid Sheinberg. He told Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, "No film with a chimp ever made money." When Bob Gale responded with, "What about Every Which Way But Loose?" Sid Sheinberg said, "That's an orangutan, not a chimp." There we go. You can enjoy more interesting facts about Back to the Future after this next track that links to one of our 32 finalists in the World Cup of Films. Toy Story got very, very far to the semi-finals. Didn't quite make it to the final. Bizarrely, linking to Toy Story, here's Sunita.
Sugar daddy's pushing me around. Got no reason to be tied down. Got my mates, got my flag, got my brand new car, and a ticket to the club where the toy boys are. We don't need men hanging around. Toy boys know how to get down. Toy boys know how to get down. So get down, get down, get down. So get down, get down, get down.
Time boy, I'm out with
Phoenix FM.
Absolutely. So get ready for some more Back to the Future trivia. Before I tell you too much more that you might not know about the film, did you know this? It had a budget, bear in mind, came out July 1985, was filmed in 83-84, and of course wasn't originally going to star Michael J. Fox, was going to star Eric Stoltz, who shot quite a bit of footage. $19 million was its budget, and worldwide gross of nearly $400 million. So incredible. Decent profits, I would suggest, for the producers there. And a lot of people forget the producer of Back to the Future was Steven Spielberg. Yes, of course, everybody remembers E.T. Everybody remembers other Spielberg films. You forget that he produced Back to the Future, of course, directed by Robert Zemeckis, written by Bob Gale. But did you know it was almost not called Back to the Future? Can you imagine how weird it would be if it was known as something different? And something as bizarre as this. We talked about Sid Sheinberg, one of the studio high-ups, who sent a memo to Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, saying he didn't like the title Back to the Future, and suggested changing the title of the film to Spaceman from Pluto. Serious? Wow. Steven Spielberg stepped in, though, and replied to Sheinberg's memo with one of his own that simply said, "Sid, thanks for your most humorous memo. We all got a big kick out of it. Thanks, Steven." If you look on IMDb or various research sites online, you can see a copy of this memo from Sid Sheinberg suggesting Spaceman from Pluto, and at various points in the film where it can be referenced. Quite incredible. Also, the script for Back to the Future was rejected many, many times. Based on the concept, Columbia Pictures commissioned Zemeckis and Gale to write a screenplay. Columbia then rejected it. At that point, Zemeckis and Gale showed the script to their friend Steven Spielberg, and he loved it. Spielberg said it was a very unusual story, but based on old-fashioned principles like family and coming of age, dreams and desires, and the generation gap. It was really terrific. Spielberg wanted his own company, Amblin Entertainment, to make the film, but Zemeckis and Gale didn't want to become known as the guys who only got jobs because they were friends with Steven Spielberg, so they sent it round every studio in Hollywood, where it was rejected 44 times. Columbia said it was too sweet, Universal said time travel movies don't make any money, and Disney said it was too incestuous. I bet they're regretting those decisions now. Absolutely. So, one of the films as well that made it into our final 32 on the World Cup of Films was The Wizard of Oz, the oldest film that made it into our final selection of films. How can you reference that with a track? You can play The Who's Pinball Wizard, of course. That's something you must feel nostalgic about. A game of pinball. Haven't played proper pinball for ages. It was always exciting.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That damn dumb blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. Like a statue, becomes part of the machine. Feeling all the bumpers, always plays clean. Plays by intuition, the digit counts as ball. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. He's a pinball wizard, there has to be a twist. A pinball wizard's got such a surprise. Pinball.
City Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
That was Pinball Wizard linking to The Wizard of Oz. We're over half an hour in. We've revealed the greatest movie of all time, according to the lovely leg-end listeners of the show that goes like this, is The Empire Strikes Back. Second place. Valiant effort. Incredibly close final round of votes with hundreds of votes coming in. Back to the Future. So for the rest of the first hour of the show, we're finding out some trivia about Back to the Future. Now, did you know the end of the movie is foreshadowed in the opening scene? It's an astonishing amount of foreshadowing throughout. The script is a masterclass in setup and payoff. One of the most notable moments comes in the very first scene where Marty turns up at Doc's vacant laboratory and shows many clocks and timepieces that Doc keeps around. One of them, if you look closely, has a man hanging from the hands of a clock. It depicts a scene from Harold Lloyd's classic silent comedy film Safety Last from 1923 and foreshadows to the end of the film where Doc finds himself hanging from the clock tower at the end. That's exciting. Also, did you know the time machine in Back to the Future originally wasn't going to be a DeLorean? And basically, that car has been made immortal because of the film. It wasn't even going to be a car in the original script, though. It was a time chamber, a room Marty would go into and be zapped back in time. That then changed to a big 1950s-style refrigerator. And then that idea became scrapped when the producers were worried about children climbing into refrigerators and becoming trapped. Zemeckis then had the idea of using a car because it meant the time machine could be mobile and involved in more exciting scenes. He wanted something that looked futuristic and cool, so the DeLorean was brought in. I love trivia like this. It's fantastic. It makes me feel very good. Why am I now talking about that? Because one of our final 32 was The Godfather. It wasn't The Godfather of Soul, but here's a track by him anyway.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. The sugar runs by. I feel nice. The sugar runs by. I feel nice, sugar and spice.
radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Oh yes, and that was the Godfather of Soul, James Brown, with I Feel Good. This is the show that goes like this. It's a bit of a movie special, certainly the World Cup of Film's final special, where we found out The Empire Strikes Back was victorious in the final with 53% of the total vote. Back to the Future, 47%, after hundreds of votes came in. Thanks so much to everybody that voted and everyone that retweeted that poll on Twitter as well. If you do want to share anything with me during the show, you can message me on Facebook, Ben Simmons Radio, and on Twitter, at Ben Sim Radio, if you want to tweet me. You can even email the station, radio@phoenixfm.com as well. And we're available on smart speaker. Just ask it to play Phoenix FM. So many ways you can be here. Now, as I alluded to earlier in Back to the Future, we're talking about that till 7 o'clock. Then we're going to go all Empire Strikes Back on the airwaves. Michael J. Fox, as I said, was not the first person cast as Marty McFly. He was Robert Zemeckis' first choice, but was working on a sitcom called Family Ties, who wouldn't release him to make Back to the Future. So Zemeckis had to go through the typical casting process, and the likes of John Cusack, Charlie Sheen, Ralph Macchio, Johnny Depp all auditioned unsuccessfully. The successful person was Eric Stoltz. Filming began with him, but there were issues almost immediately, with Zemeckis feeling they weren't getting the laughs the movie needed. Leah Thompson, who played Marty's mum, tells a story about the first ever table read with the whole cast, where everybody was laughing and joking as they read the script. Afterwards, Stoltz was asked what he thought and said, "Everybody's laughing, but it's not a comedy, it's a tragedy. My whole family remembers a different history to what I do. It's really very sad." Don't think he was quite getting it. Stoltz was let go by Zemeckis 6 weeks into production, and Zemeckis has since called firing Stoltz the worst moment of my career. I can imagine Eric Stoltz didn't find it too brilliant. But Michael J. Fox did eventually get the gig. Zemeckis went back to Family Ties, asked if he could be released. This time they read the script and let Michael J. Fox read the script. He loved it and begged the Family Ties co-creator Gary Goldberg to let him film the movie. That was agreed on the condition that the schedule for Family Ties was not interrupted, which meant Michael J. Fox had to work on Family Ties and Back to the Future at the same time, regularly getting just 3 hours sleep a night. So those scenes in Back to the Future where he's supposed to look a bit tired, not too much acting involved. He rehearsed for Family Ties from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m, then rushed to the Back to the Future set where he would rehearse and shoot until 3:30 a.m. That schedule lasted for 2 months. That is a punishing schedule. You kind of feel like Michael J. Fox deserved to be regarded as an iconic character. One of the greatest characters of all time, Marty McFly. Fantastic. Right, now, another film that made it to the business end of this World Cup of Films was Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Here's Niall Horan. No judgment from him.
Barefoot and a bottle of wine. You can stay with me tonight. You don't have to change when I'm around you. So go ahead and say what's on your mind, on your mind. When you and me, no judgment. You can get that from anyone else. You don't have to put nothing. You can just be yourself. When you and me, no judgment. We can get that from everyone else. And we don't have to put nothing. When you and me, no judgment. Breakfast in the morning, or you can slip out in the night. You don't have to give me a warning, 'cause we both got nothing to hide, nothing to hide. Even though we don't talk for a couple of months, yeah, it's like we didn't lose any time. I could be a lover or your shoulder to cry on. You can be whoever you like. Oh, then you and me, no chance.
Now, Horan wouldn't have got on well on Judgment Day, would he? Does he like Terminator 2? I will ask him one day. Now, more interesting trivia about Back to the Future. We've heard about how Marty McFly was originally nearly not Michael J. Fox. Doc Brown was also nearly not Christopher Lloyd. He was recommended for the part of Emmett Brown to Robert Zemeckis by producer Neil Canton, who had worked with Christopher Lloyd on The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. They sent Lloyd the script, but with aspirations of being a serious actor, he threw it in the trash. Can you imagine if this hadn't resolved itself? He was convinced to take the part when he met Zemeckis, who impressed him when he explained his ideas for the movie and Doc Brown to the actor. Lloyd told Zemeckis he wanted to base the character on Albert Einstein and a conductor called Leopold Stokowski. Zemeckis liked the idea, and Lloyd was hired. Phew, I'm sure, he says in retrospect. And someone who possibly is a bit bitter about it all, but possibly not quite as bitter as Eric Stoltz, Crispin Glover, who of course plays George McFly in the first film, was critically acclaimed for his performance, but there was some friction on set between him and Zemeckis. Over the years, various stories have surfaced about what went on. Glover wanted the 47-year-old George we see at the start of the film to have his hair standing straight up on end, like Henry Spencer in Eraserhead. The problem was they'd already started shooting. Zemeckis told Glover they couldn't do that because it wouldn't match the previous day's footage. Then Glover replied, "Brando never matched." Which, coming from a 21-year-old inexperienced actor, didn't go down very well. And Zemeckis has said about working with Crispin Glover, "I was endlessly throwing a net over him because he was completely off about 50% of the time in his interpretation of the character." And at the end of shooting, Glover questioned the ending of the film. He thought the McFlys shouldn't be financially well off when Marty returns to 1985, and said to the director, "Love should be the reward, not money." In Glover's words, Zemeckis got really mad. He was not asked back for Back to the Future Part 2, where George McFly only appears in two scenes and is played by a different actor. Glover sued the studio for the use of his likeness. He received a settlement, but the whole experience effectively ended his career in Hollywood. Crikey. Possibly a bit bitter. Okay, time. Well, one of the films that made it to the semi-finals, undoubtedly Marvel had to get in there somewhere, but didn't quite make the final, but Avengers Endgame made it to the semis, and therefore, let's remind us of some of the theme music of Avengers.
We'll be right back.
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
There's not many shows on this station where you get the Empire Strikes Back theme, the Back to the Future theme, and the Avengers theme all within an hour of each other. Fabulous. If you like your films, hope you're enjoying tonight. Great to have your company. We will be able to squeeze in celebrity birthdays. Don't panic about that. Basically, all the trivia, rather than going over to the weird world of news, it's the weird world of movie news. What's movie news? Movie news, even, where we're sharing information about our two finalists, Back to the Future and The Empire Strikes Back. Just 7 minutes left of Back to the Future trivia, plus another song. So let me squeeze some more in. Obviously, the antagonist of Back to the Future, Biff Tannen, is played by actor Thomas F. Wilson. Over the years, he found himself being asked the same questions by fans, so he's created a Q&A script to handle all of the recurring questions. And some of the questions on answers include, yes, I'm Tom Wilson, Biff from Back to the Future. Michael J. Fox is nice. No, I'm not in close contact with him. Christopher Lloyd is nice. Leah Thompson is nice. Crispin Glover is unusual, but not as unusual as he sometimes presents himself. Eric Stoltz originally played Marty, but was fired due to performance issues. We had a couple of personal issues, but it's all fine now. Yes, I guess if you're a star of a major film franchise, you do get asked the same things over and over again. What's Michael J. Fox like? Okay, what else? The main cast all loved director Robert Zemeckis. He has a reputation as a director who works very well with actors and is good at drawing out strong performances. The main cast on Back to the Future backed this up. Michael J. Fox said of Zemeckis, "He's a great artist. We understood each other perfectly." Leah Thompson said, "He's incomparable. Attention to detail is second to none, which makes him such a great storyteller." And Tom Wilson said, "He must have 100 megabyte hard disk in his brain," which sounded a lot more impressive than it would these days, back in 1986, when he was quoted as saying that. Fabulous. Okay, let's have another track. We may have time for one more minute's worth of trivia after this. Possibly not, though. No, let's go crazy. Another film that made it to our final 32 was the brilliant Singing in the Rain, Gene Kelly, that infamous dance moment and all that. Let's have a song that celebrates rain. Gaga and Grande, time to step up.
I didn't ask for a free ride. I only asked you to show me a real good time. I never asked for the rainfall. At least I showed up, you showed me nothing else. It's coming down on me, harder like misery. It's coming down on me. I'm ready, rain on me. I'd rather be drunk, but at least I'm alive. Rain on me, rain, rain, rain on me, rain, rain. I'd rather be drunk, but at least I'm alive. Rain on me, rain, rain,
rain, rain on me. see I'm about to fly. Rain on me, tsunami.
Heads up to the sky.
I'll be your galaxy.
I'm about to fly.
Phoenix FM.
Love that track, Gaga and Grande, Rain on Me. One final bit of trivia about Back to the Future, then a track, and then we'll move on to the winner of the greatest film of all time, the World Cup of Films winner, The Empire Strikes Back. Incredible. Final thing about Back to the Future then, in case you didn't know, in case you don't remember from 1985, the movie was an instant classic. It's revered now as one of the most popular movies ever made, but it was pretty much that way from the very beginning. It made Michael J. Fox a movie sensation overnight. The film was nominated for 3 Oscars, Best Original Screenplay, Best Sound and Best Original Song, which we may hear towards the end of the programme. And in taking $389 million at the box office, it was the highest grossing movie of the year. If you've never seen it and you like sci-fi and time travels type things, definitely, definitely watch it. If you've seen it lots but not for a little while, watch it again. Go on, you know you want to. I'm going to play an iconic song now that's not linked to either of our two finalists, but in the final 32 was another 80s classic film. Didn't really make it out of the group, but it's enjoyable anyway. As soon as you hear the as soon as you hear the intro to this song, you know what the movie is, you get images of the movie in your mind, it probably will make you smile. Let's hear this track from RPJ.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Can you call?
Ghostbusters!
An invisible man sleeping in your bed. Oh, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
afraid of no ghost. I ain't afraid of no ghost. You just want some more. I think you better call
Ghostbusters.
Ow! Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I think you better call
Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I can't hear you. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
Louder.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
And that was Ray Parker Jr.'s fantastic Ghostbusters to go alongside the film with the same name. But now, we're on to this one.
We would be honoured if you would join us.
Not true. That's impossible!
The greatest movie of all time, according to the listeners of the show that goes like this. In case you've just joined us, it's The Empire Strikes Back! What a theme. Great work from John Williams as ever. But now we're going to find out some interesting trivia about this incredible movie. Did you know the ice planet where it all begins, the genuine place used for filming, was in Norway? Yes, in Finse, a mountain village in Norway. There were some huge issues when the area was hit by its biggest snowstorm in 100 years during filming. Originally, companies would have stopped filming, but director Irvin Kershner saw it as a chance to shoot the scene where Luke Skywalker wanders through the snow after escaping the Hoth Wampa's cave. He spoke to Mark Hamill, who played Luke, and he agreed to do it. So Kershner sent Hamill out in the snow by himself while he stayed in the hotel and filmed him from there. That was brave, I guess. Also, what about this? Bearing in mind we said it grossed over $500 million in that year. Alec Guinness filmed his scenes very quickly. Yes, Luke's mentor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, returns in the opening part of the movie when he appears as a Force ghost and tells Luke he must go to a planet called Dagobah to begin his Jedi training. Alec Guinness wasn't on set for long. He filmed his scenes on the final day of production, turning up at 8:30 a.m., being finished by 1 p.m. And he was paid a quarter of a percentage point of the film's gross. So that sounds like not very much. Obviously, if the film hadn't done very well, he would have been a bit concerned. A quarter of 1% of the film's gross for 4.5 hours' work. However, bearing in mind how much it's ended up taking, I've worked out that Alec Guinness worked for an hourly rate of around £300,000 an hour. You're receiving over £1 million for 4.5 hours' work. Incredible. Yes, a quarter of 1%. Bearing in mind George Lucas funded this film himself after the success of Star Wars, didn't want to go through a studio route. He's probably done quite well out of it, hasn't he? I know he's sold everything to Disney now, but even so, rather incredible. Okay, let's have some more music that links to another film that got quite far in our World Cup of Films, Pulp Fiction Classic. Easy to find a track that links to that. Here's Pulp. We'll be right back.
Deborah, it never suited you. And they said that when we grew up, we'd get married and never split up. Oh, we never did it. Although I often thought of it. Oh, Deborah, do you recall? Your house was very small, with one chip on the wall. When I came round to call, you didn't notice me at all. And I said, let's all meet up in the year 2000. Won't it be strange when we're all fully grown? Be there 2 o'clock by the fountain down the road. I never knew that you'd get married. I would be living down here on my own. On that thousand lonely first day years ago. School to get rest, and mine said that you were the best. Oh, the boys, I loved you, but I was a mess. I had to watch and try and get you undressed. We were friends, that was as far as it went. I used to walk you home sometimes, but it meant, oh, it meant nothing to you, 'cause you were so popular. Deborah, do you recall? Was very small, with wood chip on the wall. When I came round to call, you didn't notice me at all. When I said, let's all meet up in the year 2000, won't it be strange when we're all fully grown? It's 2 o'clock by the fountain down the road. That you'd get married, I would be living down here on my own. On that time, the lonely first day years ago.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
And this is the show that goes like this with Ben Simmons. We're now talking all things The Empire Strikes Back because it has been voted the greatest movie of all time. We were talking about how the movie was financed before that last track from Pulp. If you just joined us, all the music doesn't link to The Empire Strikes Back. It links in some way to one of the 32 greatest films of all time that we started off the World Cup of Films with a few months back. So, George Lucas financed The Empire Strikes Back with his own money. Yes, the original Star Wars was groundbreaking on its release in 1977 and changed the business model of Hollywood blockbusters. Before Star Wars, sequels and merchandise were not thought of as being worth much. So George Lucas struck a deal with 20th Century Fox, whereby he would forego his director's fee in exchange for keeping full rights to any Star Wars sequels and merchandise, including toys. What a masterstroke. After the unprecedented success of the original film, a sequel was always going to happen, so in order to keep control, Lucas decided to finance Empire Strikes Back himself. The initial budget for the film was $18 million, and Lucas bankrolled it with a combination of his own money from Star Wars and by taking out a bank loan. Cripes. Imagine going to a bank manager in about 1978, 79, saying, yeah, I need a few million dollars for this film. Well, who are you? I'm George Lucas, who has a lot of money from Star Wars. Oh, yeah, go on then. He wasn't keen on directing this one himself, though, because the production of the original was long, arduous and fraught with difficulties. George Lucas ended up in hospital with stress and exhaustion, and because of that, he didn't want to direct The Empire Strikes Back. Irvin Kershner was hired fairly quickly, but before that, Lucas did consider another well-known filmmaker, one Paul Verhoeven, of Basic Instinct, RoboCop fame. He was invited for a meeting with Lucas and Gary Kurtz, the producer, about directing the film. Verhoeven said he turned up at this meeting with a cut of his new movie, a Dutch, more explicit version of Grease, you don't say, called Spetters. After he screened Spetters to George Lucas and Gary Kurtz, Verhoeven said he never heard from them again. You can find on YouTube a trailer for Spetters if you're ever so interested in finding out what on earth went on there. But then, yes, of course, Lucas turned to Irvin Kershner. He had been George Lucas's lecturer when he was a film student. Lucas regarded him as a mentor figure. He was already 57 at the time, but Lucas said to him, "You know everything a Hollywood director is supposed to know, but you're not Hollywood." But Kershner originally turned him down, saying he had no interest in directing movies with special effects and thought it would be impossible to top the original. His mind was changed after a conversation with his agent, who said he would be mad to say no to the biggest movie ever made. Crikey. Okay, now our next track is going to reference in some way or another the film The Matrix. There aren't too many tracks with the word Matrix in. Then I thought about tracks to do with computers and technology, and then I thought of Agent Smith referring to Keanu Reeves constantly throughout the film as Mr. Anderson. Here's Lynn Anderson.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime. When you take, you gotta give. So live and let live or let go. Oh, 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 I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden. I could promise you things like diamond rings, but you don't find roses growing on stalks of clover. So you better think it over. When if sweet talking you could make it come true, I would give you the world right now on a silver platter. Just to let you go. But there's one thing I want you to know. You better look before you leap. Still waters run deep, and there won't always be someone there to pull you out.
We would be honored if you would join us.
For more Empire Strikes Back trivia right now. Yes, did you know, for instance, the production was hit by many issues? Firstly, it started late. Stanley Kubrick had been filming The Shining at Elstree Studios, and a fire had burned the set down, which meant the start date for Empire was delayed by 3 months. And with it being a follow-up to Star Wars, they had to contend daily with newspapers trying to infiltrate the set. The Sun hired helicopters to fly over the set taking pictures. Fortunately, most of the film was created indoors. Plot leaks also were a big problem. Lucas kept tabs on the cast. At one point, had a report which read, Harrison Ford, 1 leak. Carrie Fisher, 1 leak. David Prowse, 9 leaks. Not a recipe, sadly. The production was further delayed by snowstorms, and a visit by Prince Charles had to be cancelled. One of the second unit directors, John Barry, collapsed on the set and died from meningitis. Frank Oz, the voice of Yoda, was visited on the set by a co-worker from The Muppet Show. And this guy, Harley Koeklis, was instantly offered the job of second unit director, which he accepted. That sounds awful. A guy collapsed and contracted meningitis and died and was replaced. I guess it was more long and drawn out than that and involved lots of heartache. But anyway, after production wrapped, Lucas saw the first cut and called it disastrous. He re-edited the movie, which he thought made it no better, so extensive reshoots had to happen and post-production be gone through all over again. Bearing that in mind, how incredible is this in terms of the future earning potential? Lucas was done a favour by an old studio friend. The budget for Empire Strikes Back had increased from $18 million to $30 million. Having paid for the film himself, Lucas was facing financial ruin. He went back to 20th Century Fox and made a deal whereby they would finance the increase in budget for a bigger cut of profits. That essentially saved the film and George Lucas from catastrophe. Alan Ladd Jr., the head of Fox at the time, did Lucas a huge favour, allowing him to keep all of the sequel rights and merchandising rights for Star Wars movies, even though clearly Lucas was not in a position to negotiate. When the shareholders at Fox found out, they were utterly furious, which resulted in Alan Ladd leaving his position. And as a result of that, Lucas took his next project away from Fox, which is why Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark is produced by Paramount Pictures and not 20th Century Fox. I love little bits of trivia like that. Very, very interesting. Now, we're going to have a track which somehow, some way, links to The Shawshank Redemption. I know what you're thinking. There aren't many well-known tracks with the word Shawshank or Redemption in. But there is one with Miley Cyrus featuring Dua Lipa entitled Prisoner.
Prisoner, prisoner, locked up, can't get you off my mind, off my mind. Lord knows I tried a million times, million times. Oh, oh, why can't you just let me go?
I can't control it. Phoenix FM.
It's the show that just goes like this. If you've just joined us, it's the show that just goes like this. I've added an extra word into the title of my show after 5 years. It's the show that goes like this, and we're just still talking about The Empire Strikes Back, which has been voted the greatest movie of all time, according to listeners of this programme. Interspersing trivia about this movie with tracks that relate to some of the 32 final films that we counted down with in the World Cup of Films. Did you know Mark Hamill injured himself frequently whilst filming The Empire Strikes Back? He didn't have a great time on set, although his son was born during production and Hamill was given the day off, but he was called back to the set 9 hours after his son's birth to redo a shot. It was the moment during the Battle of Hoth when Luke is about to be trampled by an AT-AT and jumps from his snow speeder to avoid it. Hamill wasn't very happy in being called back in and thought that a stuntman could have been used, but it got worse for him because in performing the stunt himself, he broke his thumb. Cripes. There was also an accident at the start of filming the movie. After Luke has been attacked by the Wampa, we see him in a Bacta tank recovering. Just before Hamill got in the tank, a mirror above it shattered and huge pieces of glass fell into the water. It was so bad that Irvin Kershner said, if Mark had been in the tank at the time, I don't know if he would have survived. Hamill was in the wars on Dagobah as well. The moment where Yoda and Obi-Wan are trying to convince Luke to stay, Luke pulls a snake from his X-Wing. Kershner had assured Hamill the snake was harmless, but it bit him a few times on the hand. And earlier, in Yoda's hut, when Luke bangs his head on the roof, Kershner made Hamill do 16 takes. I bet he wasn't happy about that, but I bet he was glad to be a survivor. That links to the next track I'm going to play, which of course links incredibly well to Rocky, another film in our final 32.
We'll be right back.
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Yes, but we've done Back to the Future. We're on to the winner. Back to the Future was the runner-up. If you've just joined us, the greatest movie of all time has been declared officially by the listeners of this programme to be The Empire Strikes Back. Phoenix FM knows the truth. The show that goes like this knows the truth. Yes, what a phenomenal film. Episode 5. More trivia for you, interspersed with tracks that link to some of our 32 finalists in the World Cup of Films. Did you know, for instance, on Empire Strikes Back, there were rumours of a kidnap plot involving Carrie Fisher? During her final days in the UK, she discovered from a telephone conversation with her mother, Debbie Reynolds, someone had threatened to kidnap her. So for the last few days on set, Fisher was assigned personal bodyguards. Han Solo ended up being frozen in carbonite near the end of the movie for a specific reason. Harrison Ford wanted Han Solo to be killed off at the end of Empire Strikes Back because he wasn't keen on playing the character again. It was for this reason that Lucas had Han frozen in carbonite, as it gave them the option of bringing Han back or not for Return of the Jedi. That would have been a different story, wouldn't it? And also, rather incredibly, understanding movie sets and the amount of construction that happens, a real Millennium Falcon was constructed. Empire Strikes Back was the only Star Wars film where a full, life-size Millennium Falcon was built for filming. It was 65 feet across, 80 feet long, 16 feet high, and weighed 23 tons. That is pretty darn incredible. They actually built the entire Millennium Falcon. Wow. I think it was worth it. There's some great shots of the interior and exterior of it in that movie. Fantastic. Right then, another track that links to another one of our 32 finalists. What's coming up next? Well, there's a great film directed by Jordan Peele called Get Out, and you can find links to that all over musical history. We've got to get out of this place by the Animals is one such example.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true, you'll be dead before your time is due, I know. Watch my daddy in bed and crying, watch his habit turning gray. He's been working and slaving his life away, oh yes, I know. He's been working so hard, mama's been working too, baby, every night and day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We gotta get out of this place, if it's the last thing we ever do. We gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me and you. So young and pretty, and one thing I know is true, yeah, you'll be dead before your time is due, you know it.
Phoenix FM.
We would be honoured if you would join us.
Absolutely, more Empire Strikes Back trivia coming and a few more tracks to squeeze in as well. Did you know, you may have seen footage behind the scenes of Yoda being used as a puppet in The Empire Strikes Back. But the creation of Yoda was not straightforward. The idea for Luke's mentor came from George Lucas, but Yoda went through many changes. There was originally a mentor character in the film called Buffy, which was changed to Minch, then Minch Yoda, and they finally settled on just Yoda. Irving Kershner originally thought Yoda should be 9 feet tall and have a big white beard, like Moses or Gandalf from Lord of the Rings, but Lucas said to him it's a bit cliché. Yoda was eventually designed by a British makeup artist called Stuart Freeborn, who based Yoda's eyes on Albert Einstein's to make him appear wise, and the rest of Yoda's face on his own face. Now, there is a photograph of Stuart Freeborn next to the Yoda puppet. When you know that information, it does actually look quite uncanny. If you search online for Stuart Freeborn and Yoda, it's Stuart with a U, not an EW. Stuart Freeborn and Yoda. You'll see exactly what I mean. Incredible. Yoda also had links to the Muppets. The first person offered the part of voicing Yoda was Jim Henson. He was too busy working on The Great Muppet Caper, which came out in 1981, so he recommended Frank Oz. Lucas went with his suggestion, and the rest is history. Yoda was also controlled by Frank Oz and three others, so the entire set of Dagobah had to be elevated so the puppeteers could sit underneath it. Mark Hamill wore an earpiece so he could hear Frank Oz doing the voice under the set, and Oz said that on many occasions, Kershner would give directions directly to Yoda, and Oz would have to remind him who to speak to. Obviously very realistic puppetry then. Also, George Lucas was so blown away by Frank Oz's performance as Yoda, he spent thousands of dollars on an advertising campaign to try and get him an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor, which ultimately failed because of Academy restrictions. There we go. I love all this trivia. It's brilliant. I've always loved Star Wars. I love finding out extra things about it that I wasn't necessarily aware of. Time for more music. Time for one of our 32 finalists to have a track linked to it. Seven. Classic David Fincher film. Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey. Brilliant film. Slightly unnerving. Seven Seas of Rye. Doesn't quite have the same qualities, but enjoyable to listen to.
Titan and his tools, and with a smile, I'll take.
Phoenix FM.
The Seven Seas of Rye after the film Seven. Let's go into another track quite quickly so I can squeeze as many in as possible before 8 o'clock tonight. Now, clearly, Ava Max has never seen The Real Norman Bates by Anthony Perkins, because she's got her own take on it, which was rather sweet but psycho. Possibly not about the film.
Oh, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho. At night she's screaming, I'm on my mind, I'm on my mind. Oh, she's hot but a psycho, so left but she's right though. At night she's screaming, I'm on my mind, I'm on my mind. She'll make you curse, but she a blessing. She'll rip your shirt within a second. You'll be coming back for seconds with your play. You just can't help it. No, you'll play along. Let her lead you on. You'll be saying no, then saying yes. Cause she's messing with your head. Oh, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho. At night she's screaming, I'm on my mind, I'm on my mind. Oh, she's hot but a psycho, so left but she's right though. At night she's screaming, I'm on my mind, I'm on my mind. I'm kinda crazy, she's poison but tasty. Yeah, people say run, don't walk away. Yeah, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho. At night she's screaming, I'm on my mind. So someone said, don't drink her potions. She'll kiss your neck with no emotion. When she's mean, you know you love it. She tastes so sweet, don't sugarcoat it, no.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Not true. That's impossible.
It certainly isn't. The show that goes like this has declared The Empire Strikes Back as the greatest movie ever made. Here's some more trivia for you. Clearly, John Williams, who did the score for the original Star Wars, carried on to do The Empire Strikes Back and create one of the most iconic bits of music associated with evil characters. Yes, the Imperial March. Now, did you know this, though? The most famous new piece for Empire, used as Vader and the Empire's theme music, was inspired by a very famous classical composer. 19th century Polish composer Frédéric Chopin composed a funeral march, and Williams borrowed the melody for the Imperial March. Now, I don't know whether to be impressed or outraged by this, by realising that John Williams didn't invent this. Have a listen to this. This is Chopin's Funeral March.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was Chopin. Yeah, and then it ended up as this. Yes, I get that he sped it up and made it more authoritative and foreboding, but even so, it was much more morose. Chopin's funeral march kind of makes sense if it's a funeral march, but I, for one, am slightly surprised by that, yes. Did you know as well some of the sets weren't finished in time for shooting? The director of photography on Empire Strikes Back was called Peter Sushitsky. Lucas originally wanted him to shoot Star Wars after seeing a film he'd done called Privilege in 1967. But because he was an inexperienced director, the studio said he had to have an experienced director of photography, which is why Gilbert Taylor was hired. Lucas and Taylor didn't get on, so he went back to Sushitsky for Empire. Then, during production, when the budget started becoming a big issue, the DOP came to Lucas's rescue. He said that rather than finishing the sets for Dagobah and Cloud City, just hang up some black curtains, fill the background with smoke, and he'd be able to make it look good with clever lighting. That's why there's so much smoke in those sequences. The sets weren't finished. Incredible. More trivia still to squeeze in the last 11 and a bit minutes or so. And before that, another track that links to one of our finalists, The Shining. Not quite as sinister, this track. Bob Marley versus Funk Star Deluxe. The sun is shining. No axes indoors in this music.
Shining the way.
radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Well, we're getting close to the climax now of tonight's episode of the show that goes like this. And I have avoided a couple of tracks that I want to be right near the end of tonight's episode. I hope you've enjoyed it, finding out some trivia about our two movie finalists, Back to the Future and The Empire Strikes Back. And of course, The Empire Strikes Back has a much more negative feel about it, a darker feel about it, because it sets up the third film in the trilogy and kind of ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. But therefore, I'm going to go slightly crazy and play a track that links to Star Wars as the penultimate track, mainly because the one that links to Back to the Future, I think, is a fabulous track to play us out this evening. So, bearing in mind the darker themes of Empire Strikes Back, I want to have a bit more hope. And therefore, we're going to have now some of the original Star Wars theme, an iconic bit of music, again from John Williams. You can't fail to enjoy this. If you love your sci-fi, let's all just sit back and enjoy this one once again. You can probably see the medals being put round necks in that huge room. They all ended up happy. R2-D2 hadn't been destroyed, as everybody thought, in that final X-Wing run. And Star Wars A New Hope ended very, very positively, as I'm sure this show will do as well. Although, controversially, I'm going to a track from Back to the Future to play us out this evening. But there we go, 47% of the vote for Back to the Future, 53% confirming that Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, is the greatest movie of all time. Thanks so much, as ever, for your company this evening. I hope you've enjoyed being here. I'll be back at the same time next week. Keep it here on Phoenix 98 FM, though, because Rob Harvey's up next with Synth City and Gary Davidson up later with Off the Record. So we've learned some incredible facts about Back to the Future and The Empire Strikes Back. We're now playing out with a song you hear at the end of Michael J. Fox's film, The Fabulous Huey Lewis and the News. See you soon.